What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. Another edition of the Roster Rhetorical, episode number 34. Matt, I'm just thinking, I don't think I've said the episode number the last couple of weeks.
I think you're slipping.
I think I'm getting into a routine here. So what's going on? How are you?
I'm finally sitting down.
Oh, you have furniture.
Yeah, I still don't have a couch that shows up.
Oh, that's like me. I don't have a couch either.
I get it Thursday along with the chair.
So you have a couch?
It's on the way. We're still on the hunt for a couch. Yeah, it's on the way.
On the way.
But I do have a bed, dresser, a chest, some bare necessities and things, so it's starting to look like a real apartment.
Moving up in the world, I see?
Yep.
Yeah? Okay. So I apologize in advance if my voice sounds a little not 100%. I went to a wrestling show last night and screamed my head off, obviously, if that doesn't surprise you. All right, Matt, bunch of stuff to get to. Trivia Tuesdays, as always. About a player, just like last week was about Ichiro. We have a player-centric Trivia Tuesday, and it's a player that you may know a little bit, so this one may be up your alley as well. We're going to talk about the Mets and Jose Reyes, but our top story this week is a rumor out of Boston, Massachusetts, and that is that the Boston Red Sox are inquiring about two big-name pitchers, two young pitchers in the baseball world, and that would be Gerrit Cole and Jose Fernandez, and this is interesting, Matt. I mean, let's just look at it, and these are two of the younger pitchers in baseball, the high-profile pitchers, and these are guys that you're not going to get on the cheap. You're going to have to pay a hefty premium to get these guys in, and they're on two teams that aren't really out of the playoff race yet, especially with that second wild card. Miami's right there in the hunt, and Pittsburgh is not that far behind either. So, these teams are not, I don't think, in a position that they're going to willingly give these guys away, but maybe Boston has to overwhelm them. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if the Fernandez rumors make any sense, especially given what the Marlins are going to ask for him. And, the Red Sox, even with Dombrowski last year, proved that they didn't want to pay the price, and, rightfully so. They were, for the names that were coming up, it was Moncada, Benintendi, I think even Betts was in there.
So can I stop you for a second?
You can.
They didn't pay pay the price, but they got the price.
True. Sorry, did I say that wrong?
See what I did there? Because they David Price.
Oh, okay.
See that? You didn't find.
I'm judging you from across.
Okay, that's fine. I just it was there. I had to try to.
Yeah, I can't blame you. So I don't know if Fernandez makes sense. I guess who I already forgot the other player, Gerrit Cole.
There you go.
I don't know. The Pirates really aren't about to rebuild, and they don't need to. Some of their players are underperforming. McCutchen just looks lost. I saw him against Cueto today, and it just didn't look like he had any idea what was going on.
To be fair, looks lost against
Cueto. Yeah, but he looked confused almost. Like sure. he couldn't figure out. Not that he just didn't get his pitch, or he missed a spot when he was trying to hit an outside ball. He just didn't seem like he had any. It seemed like he had trouble picking up the rotation of the ball. He seemed even slower in the outfield. So, but that's kind of a different tangent. I don't think the Pirates are really going to sell. I think Chris Sale might make the most sense.
I was going to get to him.
Because the White Sox really should be rebuilding. They went for it last year. It didn't work. They got off to that amazing start, and everyone thought the World Series was going to be played in Chicago, with both the Cubs and the White Sox. And, they've cooled off. Since their huge leap. I think right now their record is, they're one game under 500. They're 35-36. And so I know they're only 5.5 games out, but if things keep going the way they have been, they're not going to be a playoff team. And maybe they should finally go for a big rebuild. And Chris Sale would bring back quite a bit of nice pieces for a minor league system and for a big league team already, because obviously they'd be getting some major league talent back for an arm like that.
If they did go the Sale route, it wouldn't be the first time that we would connect them to the White Sox and Chris Sale, because they called about him this winter. They called about him. They called about Matt Harvey. So this is not something new from the Red Sox in terms of philosophy, that they've been going after a big-name starter for their rotation. So even after they've got David Price in their rotation, they're still going for these home runs. And it makes sense. Because when you look at the way the market is sort of set up right now, there isn't a lot of starting pitching available. So if you're a team that really wants to add a starter, why not try to go for the top tier of pitchers first and then work your way back, especially in a market that's not defined yet. The Red Sox aren't burning time. They're not missing out on other guys by doing this. They're putting feelers out there. These are the guys they want. They'll see if the teams are interested in even discussing it. And if not, they can move on. So there are probably people out there who think that it's foolish of them to sort of ask both of these teams for these pitchers. And you know, part of it is because both of these teams aren't in a position to really move guys yet. But if you're the Red Sox, there's no harm in asking. There's no harm in seeing where these teams are at and how they feel internally about their guys. And then you can sort of get a lay of what the trade market's going to look like in a month. Now, taking it a step further, if Cole and Fernandez are not going to become available, where does that leave the pitching market and where does that leave the Red Sox? And two names that I consistently cycle back to but have trouble seeing get moved are Sonny Gray and Julio Teheran. Those are the two names that seem like they're appealing enough to a lot of teams, that they have some sort of track record that teams will be interested in to make a push for. But the teams that, you know, have these guys are hesitant to do that. Billy Bean has said it many times in the past that he doesn't think he's going to move Gray in the near future. We've talked about that on this show. I think Gray's a guy that you probably move in the winter when he has a little bit more value to teams. And then the Braves with Teheran, they've made it clear that they really don't want to move him unless they're overwhelmed. And it makes sense. They're moving into a new stadium next year, the year after.
Yes, next year.
So next year, they need to have some sort of name recognition for that new stadium. And I know that might not make sense to a lot of people, because if they're going to be bad, you might as well try to blow it up and get a rebuild. But there's a lot that goes into a new stadium, and you kind of need people to get in to make it look like a project that was a success. And that's why they're just so hesitant to move guys like Julio Teheran and Freddie Freeman. Like, those two guys are probably not going to get moved. So where does that leave the market, Matt? I mean, like, I can't think, and I thought about it last night. I was thinking about it all day today while planning for the show. I can't think of another name. I guess Hellickson from the Phillies comes to mind, but he's not, you know, to the level of Gray or Teheran.
No. I'm checking in on him right now. I can't remember how, you know, Rich Hill is still having a pretty good season. He's striking out over 10 batters per 9 innings. He's walking over 3.3, just not allowing home runs at all. So, you know, he's not on that level at all with Teheran or Gray. But, you know, he's on a 1-year deal. He's not going to cost a whole lot. I think you'll see him out there, assuming that, you know, his arm doesn't explode or he kind of just regresses. He's been great over the last, what is it? He has 64 innings this year. He had 30 about last year. So in, you know, under 100 innings, he's put up 3.1 F4 over the last, you know, with the Red Sox and with the A's.
So looking at this, Jose Fernandez's name continues to be thrown around as a rumor. We heard it with connected to the Dodgers in the winter. We're hearing it now with the Red Sox. What do you make of this? Does this seem more to you that teams are just so overwhelmed in terms of how they feel about him that they feel like he's a guy that they could build a franchise around? Or is it that Miami is sort of pushing this train, that they may actually behind the scenes are considering moving him? They're conceding the fact that they may not be able to win just yet and that Fernandez is their biggest trade chip.
I mean, he's definitely their biggest trade chip. And, you know, if some team was, I don't want to say dumb enough, but let's say, you know, crazy enough to put up an offer like what they want. You know, I think from the Dodgers, the offer they wanted was Peterson, Seager, and Urias, if I'm remembering correctly.
That would have been something.
Right. You know, if some team offers that, then yeah, Fernandez is gone because you can't turn down, you know, that's three all-star level players right there.
Right.
So if some team offered that, sure. If Dombrowski called them tomorrow and said, I'll give you Moncada, Benintendi, and I'm not going to say Betts, but
Devers
and Blake Swihart, I would, you know, they should pull the trigger on that. But barring anything like that, I don't think Fernandez is going to get moved, especially since I believe I can't remember who wrote it since I'm not actually at MLB Daily Dish in terms of, you know, typing away every day. But there was an article up, it might have been by Bradburn, about how the Marlins were connected to Odorizzi. So, you know, if they're out there in the trade market and, you know, they're trying to get pitching, it wouldn't make any sense for them to send Fernandez away.
Do you think, I was Justin Millar, by the way.
Okay.
So I thought about this today, sort of after the decision by the Red Sox to put Ruslan Castillo on waivers and then ultimately outright him to AAA after he wasn't claimed. Does the fact that he is not performing well hinder their ability to trade guys like Moncada or Benintendi? Do you think because he was considered part of their prospect depth that they could move part of those guys, but now that he hasn't really panned out, that they really should kind of keep these guys just in case?
I don't think so. I mean, Moncada is viewed at as, I mean, I know he's still in the minor leagues, but he's kind of viewed in that Mike Trout class in terms of, you know, a franchise-altering player and maybe a once-in-a-generation type player. Obviously, that's high praise for a guy that's only 21 and I think just made his double-A debut today. I think it was with Portland. I might be wrong on that, but, you know, I don't think he's ever been viewed as a trade chip. Benintendi, he's been so great in his minor league career so far. You know, he seemed to be kind of like on a Kyle Schwarber or Michael Conforto track. He's struggling a bit in double A right now. His WRC plus is below 100, but, he was killing the ball at every level of A ball. So I don't think he's a guy that would be available. And you know, Dombrowski was coming in to this situation. It's not like he gave Castillo all that money, and maybe it makes it easier to waive a guy like that and just send him to the minor leagues. But even before the season started with Pablo Sandoval, Dombrowski has just shown a great willingness to, you know, recognize a sunk cost as a sunk cost. And I'm not going to waste a roster spot or, you know, everyday playing time on a guy that's not going to produce. So hats off to him for, you know, being able to pull the trigger on, you know, taking Castillo off the 25 man.
To finish this segment off, if you had to pick, you mentioned Chris Sale. The main crux of this segment was Gerrit Cole, Jose Fernandez. If you had to pick one of those guys that will probably get moved by the deadline, which one would it be?
I would have to say Chris Sale.
Really? Okay. I'm if that question was posed to me, I'd probably pick Gerrit Cole. Mainly because I think the tension between Cole and the Pirates front office is sort of building. We talked on this show about how they suppressed his salary by only renewing his contract for the minimum.
Yeah, but
which is totally within their right, but it doesn't set a good precedent for being able to negotiate with somebody down the road. So if maybe behind doors in the locker room, he's not really content with where he is, and they know that, and they can get a good deal for him, they're in a tough division. So, you know, with the Cubs being as good as they are. So if a deal that came their way that blew them away, I think they'd probably take it.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to the tension, you know, I'm sure no one's really happy about how that turned out. But, you know, if Matt Harvey can remain on the Mets after all the crap that they both went through, I think one check maybe.
Well, you've made that point plenty in the past.
One extension. Yeah. Overall, all money related wounds. So
money can sort of fix problems.
Yeah, and you know, even with Tyone coming up, obviously he had two great starts, and he had one kind of not bad, not good. And then the other guy whose name I'm forgetting right now,
Tyler Glasnow.
Obviously, it's great to have that. Any team would kill for those two guys as top prospects, but you can't move Gerrit Cole just yet. The other thing is I'm not sure what they would really upgrade on. No one in their outfield is going to get taken out of regular playing time. I guess you could upgrade first base, but they've also got Josh Bell coming up. So I don't think it would really make sense for the Pirates to move Gerrit Cole right now. You know, they've been horrible over the last couple of weeks. I can't remember what their record was, but it was something like 8 wins and maybe double digit in the 20 losses. I can't remember the exact record. I wish I could. It was on the broadcast last night. But moving Gerrit Cole seems a little premature to me, at least from my point of view.
Matt, how's your trivia brain?
It's ready. Oh, also, I just remembered that I can't remember if I was supposed to win anything from that bet, but Yordano Ventura did not get 15 games or 10.
He got 9.
You were wrong.
Snuck because it was you said that you'd pay for a dinner from me if he got 10.
But did I get anything from it? No,
you just were so so shocked that I would make such a bold claim that he was going to get 10 or 15.
Well, I was right.
Well, yeah, but he got 9. I forgot. We didn't mention that.
I'm still right, though. That's
you were right. You were correct.
All right, there we go.
So, okay. So the trivia brain is ready?
I think so.
You're going to put your 9-1 or 9 out of 10 record on the line?
I guess.
All right, so we're going to do that. And could Jose Reyes be back in a New York Met uniform? It's more possible than you think. Next on the Roster Bazaar. All right, welcome back, everybody. Roster Rhetorical, episode 34. Matt and Chris with you. Matt, this is the second time we're recording this part of the program. So now you know what Trivia Tuesday is about this week.
I do.
And that is... You don't know the questions. We didn't get to that point. We had some technical difficulties behind the scenes before we got to the questions. But it is about Carlos Beltran. He just got his 1,000th extra base hit and his 2,500th career hit. I had trouble with that the first time, and it didn't get better on the second try. But Matt was talking about how, because we were talking about Carlos Beltran, and Matt is a Giants fan, we were talking about how Carlos Beltran spent a little time in San Francisco trying to help the Giants repeat as champions.
Yeah, if you talk to people in San Francisco or just, you know, find a fan on Twitter, they always talk about how much that trade when they think about that trade, just how much hate they have for it. And looking back on it now, yeah, obviously you lost a potential frontline starter. I think, you know, with Bumgarner, Cueto, and Samardzija, I guess Wheeler would probably be a 4 or 5 right now. But the talent is obviously there. And for some reason, when Giants fans think about that trade, they remember that Carlos Beltran was awful in his stint with the Giants, which is just not true. He had over 300. He had a WRC plus of, if I'm remembering correctly, from when we did this just 5 minutes ago. I think it was about in the 150s. And, you know, I think he was hurt for maybe like a week or two, which is maybe why some people, you know, remember it differently. But he hit seven home runs in 179 plate appearances. His slash line was 323, 369, 551. And in the WRC plus, I was close. It was 158. So he played really, really well for the Giants. It just didn't work out. Buster Posey went down, and a number of starters just got hurt that year in the odd year curse.
Well, you mentioned Zach Wheeler, and it's funny because today some news came out that the Mets are going to keep Wheeler back a little bit because he's feeling some discomfort as he comes back from Tommy John surgery. And the point that this would probably make for all you baseball fans at home is that coming back from Tommy John surgery isn't as easy as guys like Jose Fernandez and Matt Harvey and Adam Wainwright make it seem. There are guys, Corey Lubke is one that comes to mind. The guys hit some speed bumps, and it takes a little bit. So the Mets are holding Wheeler back. They're hoping that he can just some rest is all that he needs. He can get back throwing again, and then he will be able to hopefully rejoin them probably the end of July, early August, I think, is when they want him to be back. So that being said, Matt, you're 9 for 10 in 2 weeks of Trivia Tuesday. Are you ready to put that on the line?
Yes.
All right, so ready? I'm going to hit start. Question number one. Beltran is one of 6 active players who has gotten at least 300 extra base hits for 2 different teams. Which of these hitters is not on that list? Adrian Beltre, Matt Holliday, Miguel Cabrera, Adrian Gonzalez. This is a tough one.
Well, Cabrera has spent a lot of time with both the Marlins and the Tigers, so it cannot be him. Beltre... I think the same answer. He's been with the Rangers long enough, and he was with the Mariners, I think.
Wasn't he with the Red Sox for a little while, too?
He was, but I don't think he was there long enough for 300 extra base hits. I think I'm going to go with Adrian Gonzalez, just because he hasn't been on the Dodgers that long, and the longest tenure team before that was the Padres, because he was only with the Red Sox for, what, a year and a half?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm going to have to go.
Gonzo?
Yeah, Adrian Gonzalez? With Adrian.
You would be correct. 344 extra base hits for the Padres, but only has 213 as a Dodger. So 1 for 1. Beltran is one of 8 players who have gotten at least 1,000 hits in each league. Which of these hitters has also done that? Vladimir Guerrero, Miguel Cabrera, Gary Sheffield, Ken Griffey Jr. Good luck with this one.
1,000 hits in each league. Well, I'm going to go with Miggy.
You're going to go with Miggy. That was what I would have gone with.
So that means it's wrong?
It is incorrect.
Okay.
Vladimir Guerrero had 1,375 hits in the American League and 1,215 hits in the National League.
I wonder how close Miggy was.
I don't know. I don't have that in front of me. All right, question three. With Jimmy Rollins no longer on an active roster, who is the only active hitter besides Beltran with at least 200 home runs, 200 doubles, and 75 triples? Ryan Braun, Chase Utley, Curtis Granderson, Hunter Pence.
My gut was Hunter Pence, probably just because I like it whenever I hear his name. But I don't know. I don't think he has that many triples. I feel like Granderson is the only guy on this list that would have 75 triples.
That was my gut too.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to change your answer now.
No, because I mean, Braun and Utley obviously have the 200 homers and doubles. It's the triples thing. So I got to go with the Grandy man.
That is correct. 269 doubles, 275 home runs, and 88 triples. So you're 2 for 3. Beltran has had 4 seasons with at least 65 extra base hits and 25 stolen bases, tied for most among active players. Which of these men has also done it 4 times? Mike Trout, Hanley Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Ian Kinsler.
I think I'm going to have to go with Hanley.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Kinsler and I know Trout didn't have 25 stolen bases last year. He only had 11. I saw that today because he stole his 10th base, I think. I don't think Kinsler has had 425. This one's kind of like the last one. I'm trying to figure out who would have had 4 different seasons of 25 stolen bases. And Ramirez, I think, is the guy.
All right, I'm going to punch it in here. You are correct. Hanley Ramirez has also done it 4 times. All right, question number 5. No switch hitter in history has had more 20 homer, 20 steal seasons than Carlos Beltran with 7. With Rollins no longer on an active roster, who's the only other active switch hitter who has even done it once? Coco Crisp, Ben Zobrist, Esdrubal Cabrera, Dexter Fowler. I think I know the answer to this one.
No. What was it again? No.
So no switch hitter in history has had more 20 homer, 20 steal seasons than Beltran with 7. With Rollins no longer on an active roster, who's the only other active switch hitter who has even done it once? So 20 homers and 20 steals in a season. Crisp, Zobrist, Cabrera, or Fowler?
I think there was one year where Coco Crisp just went bananas with home runs. Wasn't there? Didn't he hit, like, a couple years ago, didn't he hit something like 21 home runs?
I got to tell you, if I was ranking these answers, Coco Crisp was the last one I would have picked.
Really?
Yeah, so I mean, you can. I don't want to influence you at all, but I'm just letting you know that I wouldn't have picked Coco Crisp.
I think it is him. I'm pretty sure with the A's, I know he's been there a while now, but I'm pretty sure he randomly had a 20 homer season, so I'm going with Coco.
Coco Crisp? All right, just for the record, my answer is Esdrubal Cabrera. It was Coco Crisp. He had 22 homers and 21 steals in 2013.
Ha.
So you are 4, you're 4 for 5.
It does help. The Crisp thing helps because I was living – or actually, you know what? I wasn't living in the Bay Area, but, you know, I was still following the Bay Area teams in college. So I think I had a little leg up.
So that puts you 13 of 15 on the year.
Okay. So that's 86%. Yeah. I can live with that.
You're okay with that?
Yeah.
Also, are you watching the Giants game?
You know what's funny? I thought the Giants game ended like 30 minutes ago. I don't know why.
It just ended now.
Well, yeah, because then I saw on Twitter while we were doing the show that Eric Kratz was pitching, and I thought, oh, that's funny. And then I remember, wait, he's on the Pirates. And then I looked, and it was 15-3, and I guess it ended 15-4. So that's a pretty solid game.
15-4 with 22 hits from the Giants.
Yeah, they put up a 7 spot in about 2 minutes. They loaded the bases and Crawford worked an 11 pitch walk. Then Pagan hit a grand slam on the first pitch. Blanco doubled and Connor Gillespie hit a 2-run homer right after that. So, but they still managed to score 8 after that. So, not a bad day.
So, we were talking about one former Met in Carlos Beltran. So, let's talk about another former Met who may not be a former Met anymore. And that is Jose Reyes. And this story, just, I don't even know what to say about this. The Mets are now, after it originally being reported that they had zero interest in Jose Reyes, are now at least internally considering the idea of bringing Jose Reyes back in a super utility man role with the idea that most of his plate appearances would come as a third baseman. And you look at what they currently have as their middle infield is Asdrubal Cabrera, Neil Walker, Wilmer Flores, and Kelly Johnson as their four options for the second, short, and third, because James Loney is their first baseman. And it makes sense to why they would at least be considering it. I saw a report today from, I believe it was Mike Puma of the New York, I think he writes for the Post, that there is people close to Reyes said that he has always wanted to come back to the Mets, that he hasn't felt the same since leaving the Mets, and that this is where he wants to go back to, that he wants to come back to the Mets. And that's heartwarming, and I know a lot of Mets fans that would love to see number 7 back on the field and potentially help them win a World Series when it was, you know, thought upon by most of us that Jose Reyes and David Wright would lead this team to multiple championships. It would be awesome for him to come back, but there is the, you know, issue of he hasn't really played well in a while, and the looming issues with this domestic violence incident that he has over his head, and he technically can't sign until Saturday. The Rockies have until Saturday to move him, and this is a very interesting twist to the Jose Reyes saga. So, Matt, what you got? What you thinking about this?
My first thought is, how about everyone just sidesteps, at least, you know, in the Mets organization, all the baggage that would come with Reyes and just sign Jimmy Rollins. Reyes, I mean, you know, maybe he has been just so unhappy outside of New York that he hasn't been playing well. But, you know, he had one great season in New York and two pretty good seasons. Two, I'll say really good. I guess I get caught up in the adjectives there. He had two seasons early on in his career where he had a WRC plus of 116 and 118. And then one the year before he left, which was his best year ever. It was his contract year. He had a WRC plus of 142. And each of those, so for four seasons, he had, excluding one that I didn't mention, he had four seasons of above a 5F WAR. And a lot of that came from his defense, which is just not, you know, it doesn't exist anymore. He's been bad defensively for the last 3 years. So a lot of where his overall value came from is just gone. And he hasn't been able to hit for really the last year. But like I said, maybe coming back to New York would be great and it would energize him. And he'd resemble somewhat of the player that left a few years ago. But I think it would just be better to avoid him altogether. Get someone like Jimmy Rollins, who's not going to come with this domestic violence baggage. And, you know, who knows how the players would react. Obviously, that's something that they're going to consider. They're not going to bring someone to the clubhouse that everyone would just hate. And as for a realistic scenario, I know who's the COO, Jeff Wilpon?
Jeff Wilpon.
You know, I know he was quoted in numerous papers the other day as saying that, you know, maybe the Mets can't wait around until the deadline to do something. They need to do something now. They don't want to hit the panic button, but I don't think Reyes would really change their trajectory all that much. I think what needs to be done, both because it would seem like the right move and for selfish reasons because I've stashed him on my fantasy team, is to call up Brandon Nimmo.
Really? So this is basically, you just want this for your fantasy team?
Well, I also think he's ready.
I would argue with that.
He's got, let's see.
Still think about where he plays.
Right, he plays the outfield, but what's Michael Conforto doing?
No. I meant the ballpark he plays in.
Oh, in Vegas. Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, that's where every Mets prospect has played.
Conforto didn't play there.
Right, but, I mean, he came up from AA. I think Nimmo's a little more advanced than Conforto was at this point.
Sure, okay, that's fair. And it is a reasonable option that they, I think, are considering.
And I know Vegas, and Vegas is part of the PCL, correct?
Yes.
I mean, that whole thing is just a hitter's league, but,
yep. You
know, the numbers do still mean something. I mean, Vegas or the PCL isn't just going to turn an awful hitter into this amazing athlete. Obviously, it might it's going to inflate some numbers. So, you know, you got a guy on the Giants like Mack Williamson who just murders AAA, and then he gets up to the big leagues and he's kind of so-so. You know, it's too early to close the book on him, but you know, you see it happen a lot. But that being said, I mean, Nemo is a very highly rated prospect, and the outfield could use a little help right now, and just the offense in general.
Getting back to your point about him, Reyes, potentially feeling comfortable back in New York, we talk about on this show all the time about statistics and putting values on things, and Matt and I will go back and forth about, you know, what's valuable, what's not, and there isn't really a quantifiable way to put a number to what it could mean for Reyes to be back in a place that feels like home to him, that feels like a comfort level. You know, he could come back to New York and feel comfortable, be adored by the fans again, and start to play well. And we wouldn't know how to quantify that. We wouldn't know what value could be placed on that, but it's a real possibility to consider for the Mets. The troubling thing for me, and I'm gonna sort of parallel this to another sport that I am a fan of and that I follow, and that is hockey. And as a Blackhawks fan, the last year for me as a fan has been a struggle, and that is because of the actions of Patrick Kane, what is now a year ago in the summer. It was hard for me to watch the team and root for the team after the fallout with all of that. And for those of you who don't know or didn't follow, Patrick Kane was allegedly got into an altercation, sexual assault, potentially rape of a girl while in Buffalo in the summer. Nothing ended up coming of the situation. The Buffalo PD dropped the incident, but he wasn't suspended by the league. He wasn't suspended by the Hawks, and they just kind of moved on as if nothing had happened. And that left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, including my own. And it was hard for me to root for him and root for them as a team because of that. And that's kind of the sort of the same feeling I get from this situation. While Reyes could help the team, it may be really hard for me to root for him. Now, that doesn't mean I think he's a bad guy. You know, people deserve a second chance. And if he doesn't do something like this again, then obviously he's learned from it and, you know, has made himself better. But it would just be hard for me to get over that fact. So it would be tough, and it may take me a while to sort of be okay with it. But that is sort of the type of thought process that the Mets front office really has to take into account when they're making this decision. What I think is more logical is to sign Ulesky Gurriel. They are working him out either this week or next week. I can't remember what the report said. Sign him to play third. He's going to need maybe 4 to 5 weeks in the minors. So you sign him. You stash him in the minors, you let him get ready, and you sign Reyes to a prorated portion of the major league minimum. He plays in that role for those 4 to 5 weeks. You can move him around, you can mix and match. It gives you some flexibility on the infield. Then when Gurriel comes up, he plays third, and now you have a super utility guy in Jose Reyes, and that doesn't force him to have a big role. He can have a minor role where there's not a lot of pressure. He can just focus on being him and helping the team whatever way is possible. That plan makes more sense than just signing Reyes and hoping that would work. But like Matt said, they could just go the way of Jimmy Rollins. That doesn't seem to be plausible. Rollins didn't want to waive his no-trade clause a couple years ago to come to the Mets. I don't know how the fans would feel about that. Jimmy Rollins has been a hated rival for Mets fans for a while. That may be a weird dynamic. It might not play well. But yeah, so this is interesting because I still think it's a long shot that he comes back. But the fact that they're seriously considering it could make it a realistic possibility if the two sit down and he really expresses how much he does want to come back. You got anything else on this, Matt?
Not on my end.
No.
Maybe you can cut that awkward pause in there.
No, you gotta leave it in.
Well, you know, they'll know about it either way since I mentioned it.
Now it has to stay in.
Or you could just cut it and then it. You know, anyway, I do like the Gurriel angle. The only problem is, and I can't remember who wrote this, it wasn't on MLB Daily Dish, but the problem with that is that you still have 4 to 5 weeks without that real injection of offense that you would want from a guy like Gurriel. So, getting Reyes and sticking him in there for a month makes sense, you know, in terms of the roster and just logically, it's not gonna boost really the trajectory of the team like I mentioned earlier.
I think you just seriously want Brendan Nimmo up so he can help your fantasy team.
It's both.
I'm not sure. How did you get it to where you have a league where you can just stash guys? I don't have that ability.
Well, it's a keeper league, so
I play a keeper league.
One of the rules that we've discussed with the commissioner is that we want NA slots, so we can it doesn't count toward our active roster, but that you can try and stash a guy. So on my team, I have Nemo, Wilson Contreras, and Alex Bregman. So now that Contreras is up, Nemo and Bregman are taking over my NA slots, so they don't cost me actual guys on the on the bench or in the outfield or wherever I need guys. They're just kind of like my own little farm system.
Huh, that's pretty cool. You play on ESPN or
Yahoo?
Yahoo, okay.
Yeah. So it's nice.
That idea of like a sort of dynasty type feel to it, where you can kind of get guys when they're really young and hope that they're something down the road, kind of like how real baseball works, is kind of cool, and I wish I had.
Yeah, there's one guy in our league that has Trout, Harper, and Fernandez. I think he's got a couple others, but it's just because I don't know if maybe no one in the league before I showed up was really paying attention to the minor league guys, or he was just he was ahead of the curve. But his team has just evolved into this behemoth just because of all the young guys he has.
So I'm going to read you a couple of players off of the team that my buddy and I in our league has. He has his outfield is Mike Trout, a guy named Bryce Harper, and a guy named Giancarlo Stanton.
Well, if Stanton starts hitting well, that's pretty solid.
Well, I mean, he's had it for a couple of years now.
Oh, you know what, though? I mean, I if we're just talking about this year, Harper's been – I didn't realize this. Harper's not been good since his – I think Fangraphs called it his walk fest against the Cubs.
Yeah, he's only hitting .255 on the year.
Yeah, but that's also batting average.
Yeah, okay. That's a statistic.
I know, but, I mean, you can't judge a guy just off batting average alone.
No, but, from a guy who was hitting everything last year.
No, I agree, but just saying he's hitting .255 and trailing off. But I think he's been a below average hitter or just at WRC plus of around 100, give or take a couple, since what was that, May 9th? If I'm remembering correctly,
what did they walk him 8 times in a game?
I think it was 13.
13. That's something else. That's one way to pitch to a guy.
Apparently, and it broke him. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, he hasn't been the same since. So, but yeah, Trout, Harper, and Stanton, when they're all on, that's a pretty good outfield. That'll play. All right, Matt, anything we missed?
I don't think so. We mentioned that. Oh, you know what? Yeah, there is one thing.
Okay.
Lincecum's debut.
Oh, gosh.
It was really, really weird watching him in Angels Red.
Folks, I'm sorry.
But so hopefully he has another good start. His last one was okay. It was not great. For some reason, I saw a bunch of headlines that said stellar debut and return of the freak. If you actually watched the game, it was kind of worrying, but hopefully it was just some first start jitters.
Do you get joy out of finding a way to bring him up every episode?
Yeah, because I get to talk about Tim Lincecum. My favorite player.
I think you're obsessed.
Yeah.
I think this. We need to get an intervention on the show or something.
Maybe we could get Timmy on the show.
If we got Tim on the show, you could do the show by yourself.
Okay.
Just you and Tim for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. That'd be some quality audio.
I'll do that. So, I'll reach out.
You reach out to Tim and you see if you can get him on the show.
His Facebook page did share one of my articles once, so maybe I have an in.
Maybe that's your in?
Yeah.
All right. Anything else we missed?
Now I think we're good.
Okay. So you got that in, we're good? All right. As always, guys, you can get this show in a variety of different ways. iTunes, search the Roster Rhetorical, it comes up, you hit subscribe. The episodes download automatically as soon as they get released every day. This one will be out tomorrow, which will be Wednesday when you guys get this. And it will be there instantly once I post it online. And you'll have it on the go, whether you're in the car driving to work, from work, working out, or at work, whatever, you have it on the go whenever you need it. If you have an Android device or iTunes isn't your thing, any podcasting app that you have the ability to look it up, the Roster Rhetorical, and subscribe to it that way. If you're a person that listens to it on a desktop or a laptop or a tablet or something like that, Blog Talk Radio, we have a page, the Roster Rhetorical. You can go there. All the episodes are there as well. As the new ones come out, it gets updated with all of those. And if you are reading content on the site, MLBDailyDish.com, you have the ability to, at the bottom of every article, there's a little player there that will always have the most up-to-date podcast right there at the top for you to hit play and listen to. So however you consume your audio podcasting needs, it is there for you to have the show. You can follow Matt on Twitter at The Original Bull. Matt normally tweets about space. Matt, I wanted to get to this, the SpaceX stuff.
Yes.
I didn't see you tweet about it.
I think I did.
I just don't remember. I guess.
Yeah, it as Elon Musk said, it suffered an RUD, which is a rapid unscheduled deconstruction or dismantling, I think.
So if you want more talk like that, you just follow Matt on Twitter at The Original Bull. And then if you follow me on Twitter at Chris R. Schubert, I tweet about baseball, wrestling, it's random. It's very random on there. I just kind of retweet stuff all the time. I go back and forth with Matt about stuff. It gets a little crazy on there. So, all right, that'll do it for us this week, guys. We'll see you next time.